Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Souls and demons. Have you ever had a ritual? Surely you have. It can be as simple as tapping a door a few times before entering. So for tonight, I have a few stories about rituals of various kinds. So you know the drill. Sit back, grip your seats, and enjoy. The first story today is called Dad's Ritual, written by Rocky B00. You've gained weight. And you should have died a year ago, rotten bitch. Silence. My mother and I had never gotten along. Not really. It was the 1 year anniversary of the day my father had died in an attempted murder-suicide. Having tried to shoot my mother and turn the gun on himself, believing the bullet had killed her instantly. She should have died. Not him. He was the kindest, most loyal man that anyone ever knew. He never left a note explaining why he did it, or to say goodbye. But nobody acknowledged the elephant in the room that was my gold-digging, cheating cow monstrosity of a parent. My father, affectionately known as Jen in the neighborhood for his love of fixing their electricity and power when no bigwig companies would, called me his little tortoise up until his death. I used to love wearing his jumpers when they were too big for me to fit into and would be found curled inside one asleep anytime, anywhere. It was the only reason I was back at my parents' house today. Partly to make sure my mother hadn't gotten rid of his jumpers that smelled like him, or his old childhood photos that he continually flipped through every Sunday night, like it was a ritual of some sort, making sure they were perfectly in place. In the right order, had the date in the bottom left corner of his black photo album. Mostly because I knew that, although I hated her guts, my mother secretly did love him. She just hated having me and regretted it ever since, and would likely try to kill herself on the anniversary. My paternal aunt, Missy, promised she would come over after she fed her cats to relieve me to watch over her, since she knew the animosity that grew ever greater between her niece and niece's mother. 40 minutes to go, and all my mother and I have done is say a few choice words to one another, and stare at our respective teacups, like they were going to grow wings and start squealing like pigs. Huh. Mom, I... An unexpected knock on the door interrupted my sudden need to apologize, and we looked at each other with visible confusion, knowing Missy couldn't have made it over that quickly. Who on earth? A key started to jangle in the lock, and my mother leapt to her feet, hands flying to her mouth and face growing paler than milk. No. No, it can't be. I thought it wasn't going to work. I stood, grasping my mother's arms, ignoring her blustering remarks, and started to shove her towards the back door. Your room, now. Lock the door behind you. I'll see who it is and tell them to get packing. You hear me, Mom? You're going to go to your room and lock the door behind you, okay? Her eyes grew wide, and she shook her head. Exasperated and heartbeat pounding louder in my head, we both listened as the front door slowly eased open and scuffed on the carpet down the hallway. My mother's words sunk in at last. I turned to look at her and wheezed out a, "Mom? What did you mean?" She sunk to the floor, hands over her ears and slowly starting to rock back and forth. I crouched next to her, arms around her shoulders, eyes on the ever-opening door. And my vision started to reduce with the adrenaline and anxiety of wondering who would enter my parents' home, as nobody had a key but my mother, and Missy certainly wouldn't do something like this without announcing herself through text from outside first. I killed him. He should be dead. I tried my hardest to stop you, Susie, but you were in denial. And then I walked in on you doing some kind of ritual with your father's bones, and I tried to stop you. She dissolved into unintelligible sobs, her whole body quivering, and dribble making its way unchecked down her chin. A ritual? Me? I turned back to the door and collapsed. It was my father, and he had a gun. He looked angry. And I understood why my mother had seemed to hate me even more since his death. I hadn't let him stay dead. Our next story is called My Girlfriend Got Lost Playing the Hooded Man Ritual. I went to get her back by not necessarily. Do you know about the Hooded Man Ritual? X, my girlfriend, asked me 3 days ago. I'm not calling my girlfriend X to protect her privacy. It's because I don't remember her name. She's slowly disappearing from our lives like she never existed. Even her parents have forgotten her. I don't know how I still remember. It all started last Saturday afternoon. X was talking about a new ritual called the Hooded Man Ritual. I don't remember her too well, but I do know she was really into rituals and horror stuff. She would always talk about urban legends and rituals, and even did some. I remember doing the Midnight Man ritual with her. On the other hand, I'm the complete opposite. I'm a skeptic and I don't really believe in the other world. I just played along with her just like she supported my interests. Well, I used to be a skeptic. My girlfriend literally disappeared after that day. No one remembers her, and even my memory of her is fading away. I don't remember her face and how she looks, no matter how hard I try. I can only feel her missing existence, like a vital part of my body has gone missing. My only memory allows me to trace it back to that afternoon she talked about the Hooded Man ritual. I've asked all of my other friends about her, and they don't remember her. I got made fun of. Even her parents don't remember her. Over the days, I am losing more and more of her. I don't want to lose her, and I have decided that the only way I can save her is to go and do that stupid ritual. I might be able to bring her back. If you want to know about the Hooded Man ritual, you should read about it here, but I'll still summarize it for you. In the Hooded Man ritual, you basically call for a cab with two black cords at night. Once you are done dialing the number and following the steps, you can open your curtains and you may see the sky has changed a little bit, but also a black cab is right outside your house. You have to exit your house and then sit in the back seat of the black cab. You will find it empty. Then you have to fall asleep. Once you wake up, it should be 3:30 a.m., You should bring a watch with you to check this. Fall asleep again and you will wake up inside the cab, except this time, it will be in motion and a hooded man will be driving it. You can sit in the cab and observe the weird landscape of the other world. There may be another passenger. It is usually advised not to talk to them. Whenever you want to leave, lean close to the hooded man's ear and say, "I have reached my destination." You will fall asleep and wake up in your house. Again, if you want to read a more detailed guide, you can read through the above link. I followed the steps for the ritual and hung up my phone. I walked over to my curtains and pulled them open. The sky was a purple color and it was devoid of clouds. I looked across the street and sure enough, there was a black cab parked there. After a bit of internal fighting with myself, I put the old-fashioned silver watch I got from my dad on my wrist. I walked outside and towards the black cab. Its windows were tinted and it looked quite eerie. I put my hand firmly around the handle and opened the door to the back seat. It was quite comfortable inside. The seats were light colored and were very comfortable. I closed the door behind me and fell asleep in no time. I woke up slowly and was momentarily confused when I found myself in the cab. My heart raced as I checked the watch. 3:30 a.m. I prepared myself to fall asleep again, and once again, it didn't take too long for me to fall asleep. I woke up to the humming sound of a car engine. I opened my eyes and found myself in the same cab. It was moving on a highway. The sky was a reddish shade with a massive plus sign burned into it. The highway was surrounded by dull fields. I nearly had a heart attack when I noticed the hooded man driving the car. He was dressed in all black and had a hood covering his face. He drove the cab silently. I was just about to ask him about my girlfriend when suddenly something clicked in my mind. I remembered everything. Her name was Manal. I remembered how she looked. I remembered her personality. I remembered everything. It was like some part of my brain just turned on. This made me even more determined to find her, and so I steeled myself and asked the hooded man firmly, "Where is Manal?" He pondered on the question for a moment, before he answered in a deep monotone voice devoid of emotion, "Wait until the end." I was about to ask hundreds more questions when I came to my senses and realized that I had just broken a rule by talking to him. My voice caught in my throat and my heartbeat rose. I rubbed my sweaty palms together nervously. I decided not to ask any more questions. The hooded man started laughing. A laugh that sends chills down my spine to this day. A laugh that echoes in my ears again and again. He then composed himself and continued driving. I was shivering uncontrollably from fear. To soothe my nerves, I decided to look outside at the scenery. The fields were now full of strange animals. Animals that resembled cows walked around eating the grass in the fields. They had purple skin and eyes in the front of their face like a human. Each animal got more and more messed up as the cab drove along the highway. Soon the fields were filled with lots of wooden poles. Each had human heads on them. Some were fresh with blood still dripping down from them, while some were old and half decaying. The landscape got more and more chaotic as I went on. Soon the heads disappeared and the highway went into a forest. I saw people pinned to trees and being mutilated by hooded figures. They were all under various forms of torture, and their mouths were twisted into screams. The trees were all black and dead, like they had been burnt. I saw one man with the skin from his face being peeled off. I could see the flesh underneath. His eyes were wide open. His mouth was in the form of a scream. He was pinned to the tree with large metal nails at his shoulders. He kicked his legs like crazy. I grew more and more uneasy and disturbed. My mind could not make sense of some of the things I was seeing. I remember that the ritual outlined that if I wanted to leave, all I had to do was tell the hooded man. Then my goal came to mind and I put myself together. I had to find her. Suddenly the cab came to a stop. The door opened and a tall woman stepped into the cab. The tall woman sat right next to me. I tried not to look at her like the rules stated, but I could see her in my peripheral vision. She was wearing a bright yellow raincoat that was stained with red drops. I looked outside and sure enough, it was raining blood. The taxi got going again and the woman next to me leaned close to my ear and spoke. "Are you looking for her?" The hooded man laughed his creepy, chill-inducing laugh again. I started to feel extremely unsafe and nauseous. The cab started driving again and it was all silent in the cab. The blood ran heavier and heavier until the windows were tinted red. The landscape grew more and more horrific. There was a large bridge next to the highway. Hooded figures dropped already hurt and mutilated people off of the bridge. Under the bridge was a river of hot magma. The people that were dropped there literally melted in with the magma. Their skin turned into liquid and darkened until it was the same color as the magma itself. We passed the bridge and came across an even more horrific scene. People were being stitched up alive by hooded figures. Their arms and legs were swapped, and then they were left to run. We continued passing through these horrible scenes, but what came next will disturb me even more. It's hard to describe. You know how we move around in a 3D world and are 3D. These creatures were 4D. I was transfixed by their appearance when I suddenly heard a shrill scream. It was my own. I looked away and closed my mouth. My head started spinning and I felt like I was about to faint. I closed my eyes for a moment. I woke up on the cold asphalt of the highway. My hazy mind started to clear. I saw the cab far in the distance. They had left me here. Maybe I shouldn't have talked to the hooded man. Maybe I should have been patient and waited until the cab stopped, at least. Now I am here alone in this hellish world. The large red sun was setting in front of me. Soon it would be night. If daytime was bad here, nighttime would be worse. I moved off the highway and started walking towards what looked like a small village in the distance. I had to get to shelter immediately. I walked and walked, but the lights of the village never grew closer. The large field I was walking on was endless, and it felt like I was on loop. The sky grew more and more dark, but the village never got closer. I stopped myself and sat down in the middle of the field. I felt exposed and vulnerable, but there was nothing I could do. The village was just an illusion. I quickly turned back to get to the highway. I ran and ran, but the highway never came close. Hopeless, I collapsed back on the field. The sky was now dark, and a blood-red moon shone in the sky. I heard high-pitched guttural moans around me. Vulture-like birds were encircling me high in the sky. I looked around and saw several dark figures emerging from either side. The air grew foggy and cold. Combined with the dark, I could barely see a meter in front of me. My blood ran cold as I heard the dragging sounds in either direction of me. I started running blindly. I tripped on an unknown object and fell hard on the ground. I felt a sharp stinging pain in my abdomen. Instinctually, I put my hand there and felt a warm, sticky substance. It was blood. I felt around more and felt a hard rock embedded in my abdomen. I pulled hard on it until it came out. The relief was amazing as all the pressure was released. I lay there heaving for a bit, unable to move. I realized too late that I had made a mistake. Blood poured out of my wound like a waterfall and my vision grew cloudy. I took my shirt off quickly and wrapped it around my abdomen. I started to get black spots in my vision and I felt extremely dizzy. I hoped I hadn't lost too much blood. I didn't want to die here. Suddenly, I felt the cold, icy grip on my shoulder. I turned around and came face to face with a horrible monster. It resembled the Grim Reaper. It was wearing a heavy dark hood and had a scythe in one hand. The metal of the scythe glinted in the moon and had dark red stains of blood on the blade. It had a disfigured and bloody face. To this day, its face is etched in my mind and I started having a panic attack every time I remember it. Its mouth looked like it had been molded together, like someone had burned it. The being picked me up and looked at me up and down. Soon, more appeared from the fog. They started talking in a different language. Their voices were deep and heavy. They discussed for a while before a hooded man appeared from the fog. The Grim Reaper-like creatures immediately backed off. I recognized the hooded man as the one from the taxi and cried in relief.
"Leave him," the hooded man spoke in a flat voice.
The creatures obeyed and disappeared in the fog. The hooded man came up to me and spoke.
"Don't come back."
Suddenly, my head started spinning again and I fainted. I woke up in my house. The first thing I did was check my abdomen. In place of a wound, I now had a large red scar. I suddenly remember Manal and realized that I had not fulfilled my purpose. Don't try rituals like these for fun. The other world is not to be messed around with. It is a dark and scary place where we humans don't belong.
All right, time for tonight's last story. This is called My Ritual Keeps Bad Things From Happening by New Age Solution. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. No, no. One more time. That wasn't right. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. No! Tap, tap, pinch, tap. Come on. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. There. Perfect. Four tries to finally get right. It's all part of my requisite ritual that I perform multiple times a day. Whenever I get that feeling, I have to tap the top of my forearm, precisely right behind the wrist joint, twice behind my hand, making a sort of karate chop-like gesture. Next, I have to tightly pinch the skin around that same area on my forearm with my right thumb and index finger. After that, I have to make one more hand tap and I'm usually good. Keep in mind, this all happens within seconds. Whether I'm at work, a crowded bar, or even driving, it's something that must be done as soon as I sense that aforementioned feeling. It's hard to describe, but the feeling is most comparable to an intensely eerie tingle and queasiness that permeates throughout my body. It's comparable to when the hairs on the back of your neck stand from sensing someone standing closely behind you, and is always accompanied by a sense of anticipatory dread. Like you know something bad will happen if you don't act fast. Every tap and pinch must be precise, have the same sound, apply the same pressure. Make sure the time in between each one is exactly the same or recurrent in some way. I occasionally have to repeat the ritual until it feels right, which could take anywhere from 3 or 4 to over a dozen tries. Sometimes the taps and pinches have to be so hard, it's caused bruising and bleeding. I occasionally have to use other objects in lieu of my hand to complete the ritual. Once, I used a TV remote and slammed it onto my wrist so hard, I couldn't move it properly for about a week. I've done it so many times over the years. Feeling when it's right has become instinctive. It's this sense of relief after each tap or pinch, like the momentum gained from performing a combo of moves in a fighting video game. The tension and dread steadily dissipate, and are replaced with that relieving sense of having a massive weight lifted off your shoulders. I definitely have the willpower to fight off the feeling that engenders this methodical urge, but willingly succumb to the overpowering allurement. If I try resisting, there are serious consequences. That's when he appears. I don't know how it started or why he condemned me to endure this cyclical burden. I call him the Quarterman for two reasons. Everything, from the number of taps and pinches to his number of appearances, is tied to being done or occurring in units of 4. And the first time I ever saw him was ironically in a shipyard. He stands well over 6 feet tall and towers over my 5'10" stature. He's very slim with ghostly whitish beige skin containing a sickly, mottled grayish tint. Large, ovular, empty black sockets are where eyes should be on the quarterman's long, narrow face. His thin black lips rounding out his distinctive blank yet menacing expression. Whenever I look into those two large gaping voids, the feeling is magnified to the point where it rattles me to the bone. Like his sinister gaze burns a hole through me that deteriorates my psyche. His appearance inflicts pure, unfettered fear. The kind that puts my stomach into knots if I so much as think about his ghastly face. His head is covered with long, scraggly, greasy black hair, and he always wears the same clothes. A tattered dark gray long-sleeved shirt, cargo pants, and worn black shoes. Since I was the only one who seemed to notice him, there were a few times I tried convincing myself he was just a vivid figment of my imagination. Whenever I try abstaining or prolong my ritual, the quarterman gives me 3 chances that are signified by each time he appears. I'll initially spot him at a great distance where I can just barely make him out, usually partly obscured behind something or peeking around a corner. He'll get closer the 2nd and 3rd times, across the street or my backyard, and then the other end of a hallway or inside the same space like a restaurant or store. Whether it's a coincidence or not, I also seem to be plagued with a string of unpleasantries when I try fighting the urge. From car or cell phone trouble, to accidentally injuring or utterly humiliating myself. Obviously, these incidents appear to worsen as my attempt at abstaining from performing the ritual elapsed. On occasion, I think I'd catch a glimpse of the quarterman during or after some of these instances, but was never fully certain. He always manifests behind me the fourth time, and by then, it's always too late. I never physically see him, but always sense his towering, looming presence. I feel his hot, humid breath when he whispers to me. The message, always cryptically pertaining to something disastrous and tragic that will happen to myself or someone around me, which I usually figure out after the matter. When I first tried overcoming this spell, the feeling struck me while I was at work. I was unusually confident that day, telling myself it was all in my head and something I could beat through sheer willpower. It only worsened as the day progressed. I first spotted him in a meeting while peering through a window, watching me intently peeking out from an alleyway across the street. I still stuck to my guns, even when I saw him later that day while walking back from my car across the parking lot. He appeared the third time when I stepped outside for a cigarette, standing about 20 to 25 feet away from me in between two vehicles. It was while driving home I felt him manifest behind me. He slowly leaned in until his lips were an inch or so from my ear, after which he whispered a single word. Knee. Thankfully, I was stopped at a light, because I literally sprung out of my car, only to see the back was empty. The quarterman's messages always incorporate four of something. Whether it's a four-letter word, four-worded sentence, or four syllables. I didn't know what it meant until the next day. Still convinced I was beating the impulses to perform the ritual, a coworker and I were late returning from lunch, and about to rush across the street separating us from our office. A protruding tree limb had gotten tangled with part of the intersection's traffic signal pole, and it was especially gusty that day, so it shook noticeably hard when the wind picked up. My coworker, who was ahead of me, bolted across the street without hesitation. Just as the traffic pole jolted so hard, it emitted a loud, croaky groan.
Joan!
I called out to my coworker, thinking the entire pole was about to fall on her. But it didn't. Joan stopped after I called her name and was pivoting to face me, just as a car sped down the road. The driver slammed on their brakes, but the vehicle's bumper struck Joan directly in the knees, literally bending them backwards. The high-pitched snap rang throughout the intersection. Joan sprawled across the car's hood before her legs literally folded inward, causing her to collapse like a card castle. I'll never forget Joan's agonizing shrieks and hollers. She screamed inconsolably until the paramedics arrived, eventually passing out from the pain. I didn't physically see the quarterman when this incident happened, but felt his piercing, menacious stare closely watching every gesture I made. It was that very moment I realized what the quarterman's message foretold. Knee. Joan broke her knees when she got hit by that car. It was all my fault because I distracted her, or got punished for not performing my ritual. After that incident, I was torn between convincing myself what happened was an unfortunate coincidence, or the quarterman and ritualistic urges I associated with him were now over. Of course, I was wrong. And they continued without skipping a beat. The second time I resisted happened a few months later. I was using the restroom at a friend's house when the feeling hit. I was actually halfway through performing the ritual, tap tap pinch, when my phone rang. The show my friend and I were watching was returning from its commercial break, so I got distracted and scrambled back to the living room. I actually didn't see the quarterman that evening and thought yet again his hold on me had lifted. When I spotted him the next morning while leaving for work, standing just inside the tree line of some woods down the street from my home, I tried shrugging it off and went on with my day. Despite being encompassed by the feeling, although I shook it off upon reaching work, I froze when I saw the quarterman standing directly in front of my building's front entrance, staring fixedly at me, while others entered and exited. Anyone else in the vicinity paid no mind to him, despite walking within inches of where he stood. How does anyone else not see him? I thought while retreating into my car. I really am the only one, forced to endure this torturous process he orchestrates, and suffer the dire consequences of disobeying his game's twisted rules. I called off work and spent much of that day dwelling over whether the quarterman was an actual malicious entity, or a visual manifestation that derived from my subconscious. The feeling's urge was so strong that day it made me physically ill. Nonetheless, I refused to concede. After returning from vomiting in the bathroom, I saw him a third time, standing in my living room. He never came into my house before, after which I shrieked and bolted out the front door, blindly consumed with panic. I wanted to get as far from him as possible. As soon as I stepped off my front lawn, however, I tripped and face-planted on the street. Still in a daze from the impact, I felt the quarterman appear over me, before he leaned in and whispered in my ear, "Curtain opens." At first, I thought whatever he said pertained to the injuries I sustained from my fall. I had a busted lip, bloody nose, along with some scrapes and bruises, once again foolishly convincing myself I either conquered the quarterman, or he would finally move on to another victim. A few days passed, and I was meeting a special friend of mine for lunch. Her name was Miranda, and we met on a dating app. We both were very secretive about our friendship due to our age difference. I was pushing 40, and she was in her early 20s. I wasn't really attracted to Miranda, but appreciated her personable qualities, our mutual interests, and meaningful conversations. We were at a cafe near her college campus, finishing up our lunch. It was unusually crowded for a Saturday afternoon, which I didn't pay any mind to, until Miranda's parents burst through the doors. In front of the entire cafe, her parents revealed they discovered the apps and websites she visited, along with her conversations that revealed Miranda's preference for older men. They ruthlessly berated Miranda, calling her a whore and embarrassment to her family, and saying she should be absolutely ashamed. Miranda's father accused me of being their daughter's sugar daddy and threatened me with all sorts of bodily harm. At that point, however, I was so mortified and genuinely concerned her father would get physical with me that I scrambled to gather my belongings and scurried out of the cafe. That was the last time I saw Miranda, who I learned took her life a few days after the incident. You can't imagine the smothering sense of painful awkwardness, embarrassment, shame, and trepidation I endured in the following weeks, where I eventually connected what happened at the cafe with the quarterman's message. The curtain falls, I deduced, signified the unveiling of our discreet friendship, which came at my expense. I'm certain that while storming out of the cafe, I caught a brief glimpse of the quarterman's reflection in a mirror. This was a consequence of not performing my ritual. Not another tragic coincidence. I was a slave to my ritual after Miranda's suicide, loyally adhering to performing those rhythmic taps and pinches. It made me really self-conscious after people started noticing and even mocking me for doing something I had no control over, and was impossible to discuss with anyone. I became extremely paranoid, sometimes finding myself doing the ritual even when the feeling wasn't conjured. I became very depressed to the point where I quit my job and started doing drugs and alcohol to suppress my pain. There were a few times where I had enough liquid courage to thwart the feeling until the quarterman appeared. The mere sight of him was a sobering reminder of the repercussions. I felt so inferior, so submissive, vulnerable, and defeated. The taps and pinches became more brutal as time passed. The simple karate chop-like taps on my wrist weren't sufficing. I started using handheld objects to outright strike my wrist as hard as humanly possible, my pinches literally breaking the skin. There were instances where my entire left hand would temporarily lose feeling in some spots, when it wasn't pulsating from soreness or so stiff it wouldn't even nudge. It didn't matter to me. Long as I averted that smothering feeling of tense anticipatory dread and kept the quarterman at bay. My third time refusing to perform the ritual occurred while I was going through a particularly crippling bout of depression. When my mind was consumed with thoughts of nihilism, despair, apathy, and self-hate. Ironically, I forced myself to get out of the house and booked a beachside resort condo for a few days, just to get a change of scenery since I'd been mostly cooped up in my house for months. While sitting at one of the resort's bars, I met a woman named Sonia, who was experiencing her own hardships. We spent the night drinking heavily, during which I opened up about my ritualistic mannerisms after she noticed my wrists' bruises and scars. It felt great talking about my demons, and I could tell Sonia's sentiments were similar about her issues. We formed an instant connection that made me experience the feelings I haven't had in some ages. Of course, the feeling struck me while speaking with Sonia. I drank so much I was able to shrug it off, despite spotting the quarterman watching me from a nearby building window. Despite just meeting her, I felt very comfortable around Sonia, like I could let my guard down and everything would somehow be all right. Sonia asked me if I wanted to come to her condo for a nightcap, and I willfully accepted. Even when catching a glimpse of the quarterman while we were in the elevator as the door closed, I shrugged off the creeping consternation. I wanted to ask her if she saw him too, but refrained when I felt her hand slip into mine. The one attached to the wrist I incessantly battered while catering to my obsessive ritual. I remember briefly spotting the quarterman while we walked to Sonia's condo. I could just see his outline and grim facial features while he stood in the darkened laundry room on Sonia's floor when we walked past. One nightcap turned into three or four more, which led to Sonia and I making out on the couch. I'm not exactly sure when, but I dozed off in my inebriated state. Right before drifting into unconsciousness, I felt them standing closely behind the couch I was sprawled out on, long enough for him to whisper four words in that light, scratchy voice. "You can't be happy." My eyes instantly shot open, and I sprang upright, my heart pounding and sweat pouring profusely from my pores. I was greeted with a barrage of excruciating head and body aches, one of the most brutal hangovers I ever experienced. Despite feeling like it happened in the blink of an eye, I knew I fell asleep because it was now daytime. The quarterman's ominous words vitalized me with stomach-churning anxiousness, panic, dismay, and pure, unfettered fear, like I had awoken from a nightmare, but still experienced the fiercely escalating terror. The sense of something horrible about to imminently happen consumed my mindset as I scanned my surroundings for the source of whatever was provoking this alarming panic. Part of me wanted to burst into the bathroom and save Sonia from whatever morbid, calamitous fate might be awaiting, between me not knowing exactly what I'd be rescuing her from, along with how it would look by acting on such a grave impulse. I took another course of action. "There's still time," I mumbled to myself as I began frantically performing my ritual. The feeling hitting me like a head-on collision with a tractor trailer. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. "No, that's not right. There might still be time." With all my might, I made that chopping gesture on my wrist, pinching my skin so hard I heard slight cracking noises as previous scars and cut marks effortlessly split open. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. "No!" Tap, tap, pinch, tap. Still not right. I grew anxious, especially when I felt the quarterman's looming presence start to envelop me. Tap, tap, pinch. Tap, tap. "No! Wrong again." Blood streamed from the top of my wrist. I frantically and desperately tried every conceivable combination of taps and pinches, unable to abate that feeling, and since time was of the essence to prevent whatever was happening. "Please," I pleaded out loud as I started slamming my wrist with the TV remote. "Just this once, make it stop. Not here, not with her. I promise to never disobey again." From the remote, I tried using my smartphone, slamming the top of my wrist with pinches in between that. I didn't even feel them anymore since I probably killed all of my skin's nerves. Before grabbing a hardcover book and resuming my barrage, I felt the bone break at some point, but was so determined to dissipate the feeling, fought through the unspeakable agony. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. Why isn't anything working? I was drawn to the kitchen area, rushing over toward the counter. I held out my limp wrist and started pulling open drawers, grabbing any appliance or utensils I could hold to fulfill my ritualistic requisites. I tried a rolling pin. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. No, that didn't work. Then tried a serving spoon. Tap, tap, pinch, tap. The feeling worsened. A pair of tongs? Tap, tap, pinch, tap. No! By now, my wrist bone was completely fractured and my hand only connected to the arm by its muscle and tendons. It was when I retrieved this next and final item that I felt a slight sense of solace and realized what I must do to vanquish this exceptionally unrelenting episode of The Feeling. I know. I feel your presence here watching me. Let this be it. What I have to do. Spare me. Spare her, Sonya. Please don't let anything bad happen to her. I mumbled frantically while holding the large cutting knife over my head. I looked down at my mangled, swollen, disfigured, contorted hand and took a long, slow breath. Chop, chop, pinch. Chop. The damage to my hand was so extensive it couldn't be reattached. Not that it mattered since I spent the following weeks completely restrained. Sonya was absolutely hysterical when she found me, but I never again saw or heard from her, which I guess is understandable. I'd probably do the same if someone I took back to my room had a massive breakdown and chopped off their own hand. When I explained my reasoning for what I did to the doctors, they naturally couldn't relate or understand and had me institutionalized. The quarterman stayed away for the first few weeks. Even he probably realized I couldn't perform my ritual under restraints. I gained a false sense of closure when first arriving at the sanitarium, convinced I was finally free from this wretched ritual, since I no longer had the hand I always used. Once the restraints came off, however, the feeling returned, like it was patiently waiting all this time. It doesn't occur as often anymore, and I take great pains at concealing when I perform my ritual. But the quarterman seems content if I do my taps and pinches on or around the stump where my hand was once attached. I eventually stopped caring, seeing how this insurmountable ritual took away anything that gave me purpose. I'm presently going through the fourth time where I'm resisting the urge. That feeling is absolutely consuming, but the meds I'm on somewhat help. The doctor's having me type out my account with hopes of it providing some form of closure. I didn't pay much attention when he explained the reasoning behind this exercise, since it doesn't really matter to me at this point. I've seen the quarterman 3 times in the last day or so, which is how long I've gone without succumbing. As I type this, I can feel his ghastly presence behind me. I tremble while writing this, but I'm staying collected by focusing on trying to type with one hand. He just whispered something in my ear. Your tears will fall. I hope you've enjoyed today's installment of Creepy Pasta Podcast. If you'd like to support me and the stories I tell, there's a few easy ways to do it. Share my podcast with all of your friends. Simply keep listening and follow this podcast. Go over to my YouTube channel, Demon Creep, and consider subscribing. The easiest and most direct way to support me is to become a supporter. Subscribe to this podcast for as little as 99 cents a month. Thank you, and keep being scared.